keeping you up to date with all the latest SEO and web development news. With a little flavour added in.
Well, now let's have a little bit.
Detroit Style, the Trademark Productions weekly podcast radio show, coming live from Detroit.
Well, actually, Royal Oak. No one really lives in Detroit anymore.
Well, let's get ourselves started. Thank you for joining and tuning in, and only if you're listening in one ear and not stereo. It's Brian Ambrosi and myself, Dwight Sanger, Trademark Productions, and it's the SEO podcast radio show. We've been off for a week because Brian was,
I took my son to space camp.
Space camp.
Yeah.
And that was fun?
It was fantastic. He's a little astronaut now.
Well, that's cool. Too bad the program got killed.
Yeah, well, the shuttle program did, but he's still excited about, the Ares and Orion lunar shot thing.
Well, that's kind of cool.
What the hell was that?
He went to space camp.
Outer space.
Outer space. All right, let's get serious here.
Before we get serious, I'd like to mention that just a few minutes ago, we witnessed another Trademark employee, Eric Guerin, plow through a Lockhart's barbecue.
I don't know if it was plowing, though. I mean, it took him an hour.
Yeah, that's true. But when you speed up the video, it'll look like he's plowing through
a quadruple
bypass.
We'll have a video on our website. But there's this cool barbecue place down here in downtown Royal Oak, Lockhart's Barbecue. And if you haven't eaten there, it's definitely worth a stop. But they have a sandwich that is essentially comprised of 2 pounds of pork.
Yeah.
And various forms. Tube pork, which is sausage.
Yeah.
If you like tube meat. Meat in a tube form. Ham.
Ham. It's known as ham here in Royal Oak.
Ham. And then we have...
bacon, also known as bacon.
Yeah, bacon. Bacon. And then we have pulled pork, and it's all absorbed nicely into a nice big fat onion roll.
Yeah, Kaiser roll.
Kaiser roll.
And also he had to eat the coleslaw and the ding-dong that comes with it, which was stale.
Yeah. So take a look. That's the second employee that has taken that on, and he's currently in comatose at his desk, which I'm sure he'll be feeling the depths and deaths and excitements of the Lockhart's quadruple bypass coming soon. Headphones okay?
Nope, I just lost them entirely.
Entirely?
Now they're back.
It might be the box. There?
Yeah, no. They're dead.
They're dead? Well, that's... all right, so now we got you back.
Here I am.
All right, so a lot of interesting things have happened over the summer, you know, and we're coming towards the end of the summer, being at the middle, getting to the close to the end of August, and the introduction of Google+ and that network, and I've seen it taper off and traffic taper off from it, but we're waiting for the business accounts, eagerly awaiting those to come out and be happening. But I think some of the cool components are one of the cool things that just happened, and it's cool. I don't want to necessarily say cool.
It's not a big change. It's a subtle change, but it could have some significant impact in the way people behave in Google search.
And let's talk about exactly what that is. Google announced on Monday that they were expanding on...
Google Site Links.
Site Links.
Little links that you see when you search for, say, museums in, you know, Cincinnati. You'll see a list of, you know, the museum, and then below it, a list of links like... exhibits, hours, you know, the useful information that they find within the site will be shown as links below the main search result. And that's been around for years, so, you know, I'm pretty sure everybody's seen that.
Yeah, that's something that everybody's always taken some pretty good advantage of. It definitely gets you a couple more sub-results. And if you're showing up in a one or two listing placement, usually it's only in the one or two, three that I've really noticed that we've seen site links show up inside of there. There was never any real rhyme or reason on why.
Yeah, Google had made some blog posts about what you can do to improve the chances of you getting site links, but it was always Google's decision.
Yeah, exactly what it was going to be. So, looking at the advantages of it, because they always put it very tightly together underneath of it. You might have four, you might have six or eight. There was never any rhyme or reason why it was there. But now, what we see is they've really spaced it out. It's grown vertically in size. So the concerns with that is being is if you're big into above-the-fold marketing, and if you're big into first, second, third place, which a lot of people are for ranking.
Let's talk about what above-the-fold means real quick in case somebody who's not familiar with that. The fold is the bottom of your monitor. So when you look at a web page, anything that you have to scroll down to see is considered below the fold.
Okay, so we got the fold line. So when you type into Google and say we're looking for museums, and now you have your search display result, that's pretty much standard. So the bottom of the screen is going to be the fold line.
Yeah.
And so you're more apt to look at, again, you know, being trained as Americans, top to bottom and top left to bottom right, essentially. So you've got paid ads that essentially are probably going to be there on the top and the right-hand side. But now you've got the site links that are going to be dramatically larger, taking up a lot more. And the keys that I see with this here is it's either going to train users that they're going to need to scroll down further and probably put a little bit more emphasis in longer results or results that might be in third, fourth, fifth to tenth place, or they're going to avoid those and they're not going to realize that they're there because it's essentially pushing results two and three and four below the fold and a lot of times than not.
Especially three and four. I think on a normal computer display, most laptops, most computers, you'll see the first two, if all the search results, if say the first five search results have site links, I think right now, the way they've changed it, you're going to see, like you said, those paid links, and then probably only the first two search results without scrolling, which is a pretty significant impact for people who are trying to get to the top of that site. Because now, even if they're third, fourth, fifth on a search result, they're going to be below the fold, which some people might have an issue with.
Yeah, well, definitely. Now, some of the things I'm going to be paying attention to, I've started with it this week on two of my particular sites of actually changing some of the title attributes to H1 tabs, tags, but also to page titles and actually navigation tiers as well, so that I can actually benchmark whether or not they're pulling data that I'm suggesting for the actual titles of like an About Us or a Services page or Hours of Operation. Where are they pulling these subs from, and can we be suggestive as much as possible? Because it's at a larger font size now, there's more white space in between it. I think that's going to help a lot with social conversion, so someone actually looking at the result and wanting to opt to click on one of those. So how can I be more suggestive in my keyword selection to Google or to Bing? Well, this isn't a deal that Bing's doing, but I'm sure it's going to be sure to follow, so that we can get a better conversion factor out of those. Because lo and behold, if it's going to just be your company name, God, I hope everybody ranks for their goddamn company name.
Yeah. Unless, if they don't, they're definitely doing something
unless
wrong.
You're just cars.
Well, fair
enough.
That'd
be a little tough. But for some of the long tail keywords or the keywords that you are being competitively, you know, continuously ranking for, I think you want to have the right keywords and look at the conversion points that are making people click on pages within your site. Because, you know, not everybody's going to enter through your homepage. So that's kind of a interesting aspect in the wonderful wide world of web.
I also wonder what it's going to do to mobile search results. I haven't looked at it on a phone yet, to be honest with you. But, you know, you have a significantly reduced screen real estate on a mobile, but you do have the vertical form factor. So
now, what if you have one of those HP touches? Is it going to have the same?
You won't have an HP touchpad anymore. If you do, consider yourself lucky. Put it in a vault, and you'll probably be able to sell that sucker on eBay for, you know, $2,000.
You're right. It might be a good closeout thing to get this week.
Yeah, go to Best Buy. They have a stock that they would love to get rid of HP touchpads, which
and
are now
seal it
dead.
In one of those vacuum bags.
Yeah.
Put it away for your kid, and when they turn 21, give it to them, and they can auction it off.
There you go.
It becomes our generation speak and spell.
The extremely rare HP touchpad, rarely seen in the wild.
God, what a dump. And HP is getting completely out of desktop business.
That's not confirmed yet. They're completely out of WebOS, which is the operating system that they bought from Palm, which is a totally viable and completely polished and finished operating system.
Wow.
It's actually a really good mobile operating system.
Yeah, it is. Well, what Palm devices are there now, though?
The Pre 3 was about to come out, but really the Palm devices are kind of dying. But WebOS was making making a splash on tablets because it's a really good tablet interface. It's better than Android. Some people say it's better than iOS. But, you know, the touchpad was supposed to be the kind of premier device for WebOS on a tablet. So the WebOS IP is probably up for grabs. HP will probably be able to get, you know, several tens of millions of dollars for it because it is a completely done platform, and it's good.
And there's and a very big modern business reason why they got rid of that.
Imagine if Sony bought WebOS.
Sony's had some dog products too, though, and some dog
but
operating
they're
systems.
They're one of the companies that has a totally end-to-end device chain. They have mobile, they have televisions, they have, you know, computers, home entertainment, gadgets. If they don't have an operating system.
That's
so
a good point.
They could become like, you know, an Apple-like experience with a single unified OS across
the
entire
I'm sure they were
line.
Approached in the whole dissolution of that.
Could have been.
You know, they've probably turned it down for a reason.
Well, it's up for grabs. If you want WebOS, you can talk to HP. Just go to hp.com and click buy WebOS.
You know what, though? Since a topic that I've been following over the past probably 2-3 months has been IP hoarding. So intellectual property, intellectual property hoarding, where people are buying up patents in process just so they can then go into the business of going after people that are potentially infringing or have a challenging point in other processes and patents.
So then let's talk about Google's purchase of Motorola Mobility, which just bought them 17,000, give or take, patents for,
yeah.
For their library.
Yep.
Now, the interesting thing about that, I think, is that Google is not necessarily looking to innovate with those patents. I think they are looking almost entirely to protect their brand from frivolous lawsuits or patent lawsuits.
There's probably a lot of truth to that. And you know what? Now that I think about it, is probably about 2-3 weeks ago, there was a post on Matt Cutts' Google Places account, and he was actually referencing some different 2 or 3 articles talking about intellectual property and this entire new business that's being put out there. And I think I spent some time reading that on the weekend because there were some very lengthy articles. I want to say one of them was at the Times or the Post, but it really went into the fact of how there's a couple different IP houses that are really, really sought after, and they're really accused of headhunting. That's really the name of the game, that what they do, and then gobbling those up just for the point of going after the violators
yep.
and doing so. So that's funny now that we talk about this unsuspectedly, and here you have that post just, you know, 2-3 weeks ago. I want to say like 2. Can't be any longer than that.
Yeah.
Premeditative.
Maybe. A little bit of a
I don't think
oracle.
I don't think Matt Cutts is the glamorous, smiley, beautiful boy that he all aims to be. He's still a PR puppet. We had a good one. So, whatever. We're going to wrap it up in a minute here, but we wanted to let you know about the Google Insights.
Site links.
We wanted to give our insights on the site links.
That's true.
And what that can be doing for you. And let's talk for a second about some new social components that are happening and some integrations and different flow of different types of things. But Clout, they've got a couple new measurement components.
Yeah, they've added even more services to their metrics. They have added YouTube, Flickr, Blogger, Last.fm, Instagram, which is interesting because only iPhone users have access to Instagram. Tumblr.
And Tumblr.
Yep.
Flickr, too, though.
Yeah, I said that.
Okay, you did. Yeah. And you said Last.fm.
Mm-hmm.
What was also interesting, too, is there's a great video by some other old, noble, Ivy League programmer on the web spam team and Matt Cutts doing a 10-minute presentation about a bunch of different identifying factors that are helping to manipulate or to be suggestive in ranking algorithm. So some new components to it. And I actually have a copy of that repost probably late last week. Might have been Monday this week. That's on mine. So look for Dwight Seringer on Google Places if you're not out on there. But to take a look on that because it's a great component because they talk about your account activity. They talk about the amount of Gmails you are, how you're utilizing Gmail, who you're sending to. Are they in a circle or not? Are they, how often are you sending to them? What's the context of those emails? Are you actually active on YouTube? Are you viewing videos? Are you commenting? Are you subscribing? So a lot of different activity appointments. I think they're almost establishing their own clout or viability rating for users.
Which is probably something that we'll never get to see. It's probably entirely internal.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it is. But it's going to help with ranking factors, which I look to my right shoulder and I see the little red devil on there and I'm thinking, okay, so how can we go in gray and black but keep it white And utilize that to our advantage, because there's going to be a gray market that opens up that's going to allow you access to some of these clowns with these high ranking factors, because we can push them a fat white envelope or some other type of monetized component and not buying some of their activity. That's going to be reachable, and that's definitely going to be a market that advertisers are going to explore.
I think what we're seeing overall as a pattern for this summer with Google's all of a sudden, you know, really big push to social is the days of search results for people in general are numbered. So, like, if anybody types in, I'm
that's
searching for
statement.
Widgets on Google, it's going to be the same no matter where they're at. On any computer, any place in the country. And I think we're getting to a point where search results are going to be individual. I think each person who logs into Google and types a search is going to see different results.
Highly individualized. And that's already been outlined and stated that, you know, with the accounts all going completely public at the end of July, and now it basically you're logged in, so now that's when you're going to get suggestives and reminders of people within your circles or suggestive people outside of your circles that are in your friend circles that have plus one or clicked on certain other types of links. I mean, all of this is building up a persona, and it's going to be continuously out rolling out and changing to cater your type of results that are going to be best created for you by
which,
you
to me cements the concept that companies big and small and tiny all need to realize how desperately important it is to engage in the social space.
Yeah, it's important to understand this. It's important to be very, very aware of the pros and cons and not just deploy some type of new site and some type of campaign without actually sitting down and considering a strategy and tactics.
You have to be strategic about it.
I mean, this is basically rumbling through the, through the jungles of some foreign country in a war and not really knowing, only perceiving what may be coming your way, but be ready to engage and react and change, you know, your strategy and your tactics, what's coming at you, because we're definitely in a landscape right now with those types of things.
Yep.
People are going to get left behind. So don't get left behind. Call us. Follow our circle. Be in our circle.
We can help you strategize.
In the circle of trust.
Trust.
All right, Brian and Dwight. Brian, say goodnight.
Goodnight, Dwight.
All right, goodnight, Brian.
Thank you for listening to Trademark Productions' weekly podcast radio show. Remember to submit your questions online at tmprod.com and subscribe to our newsletter and on iTunes. No copying of this can be reproduced without permission. Terms apply. Copyright TM Productions 2011. All rights reserved.